So just a quick question. Have you ever met certain people in your life where just within a very, very short time, like maybe even just a few moments, there's this internal thing. It's like, okay, this is my people. Like maybe something like this. This is a video clip that's been going around. Like, I have found my people. Well, for most of us, from a very young age, regardless of whether we're more extroverted or we're more introverted, there's just something in us that with certain people, it's just like it's effortless, right? And like, it happens pretty quick. It's funny, a few years ago, we were actually, Sean and I were flying up to Minnesota for kind of a week-long meeting and training that actually was leading up to the launch and the planting of New Life. And there was another couple from Wichita also doing ministry in the area. They were going to, but it was like a 5 a.m. flight. I had never met these people before, and I'm an extrovert, but I will confess that I actually made sure that we were not going to sit near them because, like, I don't want to talk to these people that early in the morning. I sound really bad, right? Just like... But the funny thing was, is we met at the gate before we got on the plane, and within about 2 minutes of talking to him, I'm like, oh, man, now I kind of wish we were sitting together. We had an amazing time over that week, and then coming back, we actually made sure we sat together. But you know, there are those people where, again, it doesn't matter if you're extrovert or you're introvert, it's just like, it just happens, and you just connect. And then there are those situations where, you know, it's on the other end of things. We've all interacted with people or been in relationship with people, and we never say this to their face, and it's not that there's anything necessarily wrong with them, but it's kind of work. It's like there's this effort. It's like it requires so much mental effort, and sometimes it's awkward and clunky. Sometimes we're like looking forward to, okay, when is this particular interaction going to end, looking at our watch. I'm curious, any of you ladies that dating or back when you did date, like did you going on a first date, did you ever arrange with a friend to like call or text at a certain time so that if it wasn't going really well, you could pretend it was an emergency, you had an exit plan? I see a lot of ladies nodding their heads. So for those of you with husbands now, apparently, you know, you guys won, so that's good. But you had an exit plan. But regardless of how natural the connection is or not, there's a dynamic about relationships that we don't really think about. And this is true of most of our relationships. And it's this dynamic, that the relationship you have with others is rarely the same relationship that they have with you. In other words, you're in a relationship with a lot of different people, but it's rarely the same relationship. The best and easiest way to illustrate this is the parent-child relationship. For those of you with little kids, or for those of you who have raised kids, like you get this. I mean, your child, especially when they're young, your child does not have the same relationship with you because you have a relationship with a child. Your child has a relationship with an adult. Those are two very different relationships. You're in a relationship with someone who is 100% dependent on you. Your child has a relationship with someone who holds all the cards, at least until about the age of 13. Then the cards start getting mixed up a little bit. Things become confusing. And this is why we never really get our parents until we become a parent. I mean, you have a relationship with your child. You have to be in a relationship with your child to understand a bit of what it was like for your parent to be in a relationship with you when you were a child. Because it's only when you become a parent that you feel what they felt, you experience what they experienced, you fear what they feared, you're concerned with the things that they are concerned about. And this is why most of us as adults, we go back and we apologize to our parents, right? Like, I had no idea how. It's like, I owe you the biggest apology, but we didn't know. With all four of our sons, I mean, they're all men now, and all four of them, they have come back to apologize to mom and to me for things. In fact, our oldest one, who created more problems than the other three combined, like, it's like the light has gone. He's like, oh, I'm going to take so good care of you when you're old. Like, yes. Yes, you are, because we look this old because of you. But the interesting thing is their regard has just gone up the older they get, especially for our first one who now has a child of his own. But when they were growing up, mom was just mom. Dad, like I was just dad. And there were so many times I would say, listen, I've lived 13, I've lived 14, I've lived 15. I survived and came out the other side. You can trust me, just listen to me. But until you're in that role, until you've walked in certain shoes, you don't really understand the relationship. You're in a relationship, but it's not the same. And this dynamic is true for most relationships. No matter how much you may have in common, you're you and they are them. So you have your own personal experiences and background. They have theirs and their perspectives. But as obvious as this is, we rarely take this into account when it comes to how we communicate with one another. So like at work, you're in relationship with an employer. You're in a relationship with employees, but it's not the same relationship. It's like everybody's friendly, but you know you're not purely and fully friends. Why? Because there's an inequality. One has authority over the other, and in the end, the other has to prioritize the needs of the larger organization over the individual. A family, older brother, older sister, younger sister, it's a relationship, but it's not the same relationship. There's an inequality. Everybody's of equal value in the relationship, but there's unequal power and influence and authority or felt authority. And when this is the case, it means you're in a relationship with someone, but it's not the same relationship. And this isn't a problem to solve. It's just a reality. It's just a tension that we have to manage, and it's a tension that we should all figure out how to leverage this in a positive and powerful way. It should govern and influence the words that we choose when we speak to others. Now, we're in part two of this series, The Weight of Your Words, and if you've ever been crushed by someone's words, you get this. We talked about this last week, that words carry weight. They can leave a mark for good or for bad. They can inspire or build. They can destroy or wound. And we've all been on the receiving ends of words that have built us up and on the receiving ends of words that have torn us down or taken away our confidence. Words like, I'm proud of you, or you embarrass me. I wouldn't miss it for the world. You're not needed here anymore. I love you. I don't love you anymore. Will you marry me? Or we need to break up. I want a divorce. We've all been on both sides of words like that. In fact, some of those phrases are emotional for you because they reflect something in your past, words that were said to you. Suddenly, words on a wall or on a screen are suddenly very personal, and it becomes emotional. So you understand very personally that our lives have been shaped significantly by the words spoken to us, over us, and at us. And this is true for us in childhood. It's true right now, maybe for some of you in your marriages. Maybe you're carrying wounds. You are wounded. Your spouse has said, you know, I'm just telling the truth, or I'm just being honest, or they're withholding words that you just desperately long to hear from them. And we talked about that last week, and maybe it's like you're killing me with the weight of your words, or you're killing me with your silence and your withholding of words. Last week, we looked at the words of the Apostle Paul when he wrote, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth. It was used, the words used for rotting fish. But only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. And no matter what you believe about God or Jesus or the Bible, you understand this, that words inflate or they deflate our confidence. Words spoken to us, at us, over us, impacts who we see in the mirror. And the other thing is, here's where we make a turn. While we're quick to acknowledge the fact that words spoken to us, at us, about us, have impacted our lives, we're not so quick to recognize and take responsibility for how our words land and impact others. And this should bother all of us, but it should bother a specific group of us more, those of us who consider ourselves Jesus followers. Of all people, we should take responsibility for our words, and here's why. The Apostle Paul, he comes along, he teases out Jesus' new covenant command to love as God through Christ has loved us. And the Apostle Paul says throughout several of his letters, he says, listen, we are one another people. That is what Christians are supposed to be. We're supposed to make decisions and choose words and respond in such a way that the other person on the other side of us benefits in being in a relationship with us, on being on the other side of us. We're supposed to encourage one another, honor one another, forgive one another, carry one another's burdens, that we're supposed to sacrifice for the sake of other people. And this doesn't come natural because we're naturally selfish and self-centered. But our words matter. And so we're more responsible than the average person for leveraging our words in such a way that it builds others up. It should characterize us. Now, if you're not a Jesus follower, not a Christian, or maybe used to be it, I mean, people like that have had this experience, they would be more curious if Christians had been more cautious with their words. That many would be more open to and leaning into and rediscovering the faith that maybe they grew up in. If Christians around them had used their words in a different way as it relates to them or people that they love the most. So in this series, we're digging into specific words from the Apostle Paul and from James, the brother of Jesus, to help us flesh out these three dynamics that are present in every conversation. And regardless of if you even have faith, it's just going to be extremely helpful because these three dynamics are at play and they actually determine what people hear regardless of what we actually say. And we've all been on the receiving end of these dynamics, so it should be easy for us, but it's not. In fact, I'm the one standing up here with a microphone on my face, and as recently as yesterday afternoon, I got it wrong. I was working outside. My bride came home from a bridal shower. I had just finished mowing when she came, and she expressed a desire to me. And she did it in a gentle tone. She did it with all kinds of diplomacy. But it just, for whatever reason, landed like three different ways of wrong to me. And I went from being just in a great mood to being just frustrated and a bit mad. And as I described last week for all of us, we face moments where words will storm the gate of our mouth. And we're the gatekeeper. We choose what we let out of the gate. The problem is we're not very good gatekeepers. And to make it worse, our tendency is to conclude that what the other person hears, what the other person needs to hear is what I feel like I need to say. When the reality is, it's all about making ourselves feel better. Well, I am Exhibit A. And by the time we finished exchanging words, it resulted in my bride, who I love more than any other human on the planet, of just turning and silently walking back into the house because of what I said and how I said it. And as I finished outside, just reflecting what had just transpired, I was thinking, what is wrong with me? Like, all I'll tell you is it involved grass clippings. And I was thinking, over grass clippings, I allowed words out of my mouth that hurt the heart of the person that I love the most in the world. And so then the next 2 to 3 hours were spent with gentle words and some acts of service and humbling to just help repair the damage that had been done. And then by this morning, just by talking, in about 90 seconds, I was able to get to the root desire of her heart, which I actually agreed with. And if only I just simply applied the counsel of James, the brother of Jesus, be slow to speak, quick to listen, would have changed everything, and I never would have hurt my wife's feelings. So again, we're talking about this because most of us, when it comes to how we steward our words, we're not very good at it. Especially at certain times. Some of us, it's just like a fire hydrant. We got a lot of words, right? And the words that say they just come out. Others of you struggle, and I understand. Like there's this frustration. You struggle to find and formulate the right words and struggle to like get them out like when they need to be gotten out, when you need to most say them. And the last time we were together, we talked about the first of these three dynamics. The first dynamic is that words are not equally weighted, that all words don't weigh the same, and specifically, negative words weigh more than positive words. So we talked about not just portion control, but proportion control, that the proportion of positives to negatives, it's a big deal. That if we want to have the kind of relationship and influence with people that we care about, our family, our spouses, our children, our coworkers, everyone around us, for them to be able to hear the sometimes hard or negative things that we do need to say, we've got to be regularly loading up on the positives because it's very difficult for people to hear the negative if all they ever get is negative. And again, we get it when we're on the receiving end, but it's like when we're on the giving end, it's like a fog. So we talked about that last time. Today I want to talk about the second dynamic, that the source determines weight, that the weight of the word is ultimately determined by the source, the who said behind the what is said. So, for example, ladies, if you decide to meet one of your girlfriends for lunch or maybe over coffee, they get there earlier and you walk in, your girlfriend looks up at you and says, wow, you you look great. I mean, that outfit. I mean, you look great. You look so young. Like, okay, those are like 5, maybe even 10-pound words. You're like, oh, that's so sweet. Thank you. But imagine you're home that afternoon and your husband walks through and he stops in his tracks and does a double take and goes, wow, babe, you look amazing. You look beautiful. What you're wearing makes you look so young. Or let's take it up a notch. Imagine you have a 15-year-old daughter. And a 15-year-old, your 15-year-old walks through, she stops and takes a double, does a double take, says, Mom, you look so beautiful, you look so young. And they just like go off to the room. So they're walking away like, we could be sisters. Now some of you are thinking like, I don't have that much imagination. But still, those words, you know, from your husband or from a teenager, a teenage child, they weigh more. But what makes the difference? The location? No. The words? No. The source. Those 5-pound words become 50-pound words depending on who's using them. And like, I can't tell you how many times in our marriage I've told my wife what a great mom she was, what a great mom she is. And those words, I mean, they maybe weigh 50 pounds. But then imagine when her Mother's Day card from one of her adult sons this year, he writes this, Mom, you are the first person I call, in parentheses, plus dad. If I need help or advice, I can always count on us being able to pick up right where we left off. And when we talk, you are a constant in my life. You're constantly supportive, constantly kind, constantly loving, and constantly a source of comfort. I love you. Happy Mother's Day. Imagine those words to you as a parent from an adult child. 500-pound words, right? Source determines weight. Weight determines impact, and then impact determines outcome. The source of the words determine the weight of the word. Weight determines the impact, how it lands, and then impact determines outcome. Now, this is also true when it comes to criticism, and again, we've all experienced this. As you can imagine, as a person who has stood before hundreds and stood up hundreds and hundreds of times in front of all sorts of sizes and groups of people communicating about God and faith and relationships and morality and biblical truths, I've faced many critics over the years, especially with the advent of social media. And I've had individuals criticize me behind my back to other people, even other pastors criticize me publicly or on social media. But here's the thing. Here's what determines the weight of the criticism. The source. There are some who have talked behind my back or criticized me on social media, and it may bother me for a minute because I'm human like anyone else. Like, I don't want to be mischaracterized or misjudged. Nobody likes being talked bad about, but I tend to just kind of give it to God and move on. But if I find out it's a person like within my own community or a trusted friend criticizing me, especially if it's behind my back, it hits harder, right? If it's one of my close friends or a trusted partner in ministry, a fellow leader who's in the trenches with me, if they come to me with a hard conversation, with a criticism, I mean, those words, they weigh far, far more. It impacts me because of the relationship, because of the source. And then if my wife comes to me, again, her words are 500 pounds. They affect the outcome of my life. Why? Because source determines weight for the positives and the negatives. And this is why this is so important. Because every single one of you, every single one of you has a unique potential to leverage the weight of your words in the specific relationships that you're in. And if you get this right, you make other people better. And what if we just began to remember that everywhere we went, in every conversation, especially every time when you realize that you have a bit of position, a unique position, or a unique advantage in this relationship. It's like we're in a relationship, but it's not the same relationship. I mean, imagine what you could do. Imagine the power that you have, because we understand the power of words. So here's the application. It's to remember who you are and what you represent to the person on the other side of you. To remember who you are, what you represent in any relationship, especially if it's one where you have an advantage positionally, relationally, even financially, and to recognize that you have been given a unique opportunity because your words carry additional weight. And the question is, would you be willing to leave here, to log off, and to just decide that you're going to leverage every chance you get to leverage your weighty words to encourage, to build, to direct, and to protect? Now, real quick, I just want to say something to all of us with living parents, whether you're old or whether you're young. We play a unique role in the lives of our parents. Your words weigh more than you'll ever understand, especially the younger you are. Your words weigh more as they relate to siblings, to brothers, to sisters. Like it's like, especially if you're growing up, it's like, my younger brother, my younger sister, like they're like a gnat. Like, why are they even in the room? Why did mom and dad have to procreate beyond me? I have witnessed my adult sons apologize to one another for how they treated one another growing up. They're embarrassed. They wish they could go back and do it differently. I witnessed my uncle, who was the older brother to my dad, and he was just horrible to his younger brother growing up. The boy that would grow to become a man who would become my father. And it wasn't until they got to their 40s where it finally hit my uncle, like, what he had really done, and he was ashamed of it. And he realized what a horrible waste it had been. They were very different, but they could have been great friends. And he had to own the cruel things that he said and he did. And they went through an amazing healing time as men. And then fast forward, my dad ended up one of the main people just constantly driving back and forth to Kansas City to be beside his brother as he slowly died of cancer. And for both of them, there was grief. It was just like, we wasted so much time. Over what? Just stupid, dumb decisions and words spoken in the past, and it created these wounds. So for siblings, just, you got to decide. You'll either use this short time and this fleeting opportunity to do something amazing in the lives, especially of your younger brothers and sisters, or you're going to miss it. And your words and the lives of your parents, they weigh 500 pounds, positive or negative, as it relates to your parents. They have the power to crush or the power to encourage. A quick story. I've worked with a lot of couples. I've done a lot of weddings. I've had younger couples. For whatever reason, they see Sean and I on the outside, or they spend a little time with us. They go, it's just so fun to watch you and Sean, and I love the way you guys are. I hope we get a marriage like you guys someday. My first thought, especially when we were earlier in our marriage, like, I think you need to come live with us for about 3 months. you might change that. So, but still, those words were great. They were encouraging. 10-pound words. And I've talked about this before. 12 years ago, I was on my way back from Hawaii to San Diego. I was on board the guided missile cruiser that my son was stationed on, coming back from the Persian Gulf. He was 20 at the time. And one day, we're just hanging out in the laundry room while he did his laundry. We're just talking about life and growing up. When out of the blue, he looks at me. And he says, Dad, all I know is when I'm married someday, I hope my marriage is just like yours and Mom's. Now, how do you think those words landed with me from my adult son? Like, I can still remember the smell of the detergent, the lighting. I remember what the room looked like. I remember the sway of the ship. I remember why, like it was yesterday. Why? Because of the source. Those weren't 10-pound words. Those were 500-pound words. So just the point is, whether it's at home, whether it's school or work or in the neighborhood, remember who you are and remember what you represent to the person on the other side of you. Just one more quick illustration. And moms and dads, this is so important if you're raising kids right now. When you walk into your child's room to address something negative or deliver some bad news, who do you see? You see someone who knows better and needs to do better. But who do they see? They see the person whose approval they want more than anything else in the world. You have a relationship, but it's not the same relationship. And who we are and what we represent should determine the words we choose and how we say them. Now, so far, you may be thinking, this is great advice, but a lousy sermon. And in fact, is this a positive thinking church? Okay, no. Yes, but no. But because the foundation of everything that we talked about thus far has been the Apostle Paul giving us handlebars to love as Jesus loved with our words, that we have a responsibility to not just say whatever we want or just express our feelings unchecked, and not even just to speak what is true. Because as we said last week, you can speak everything that's true and you will have no friends and no job. But to speak only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. So if we just stop right there, you can imagine what an incredible shift there would be in our nation if all of us would just begin leveraging our words, of taking the approach of building up and encouraging the person on the other side of us, including people who don't think like us, who don't vote like us, who don't believe all that we believe. We've been commanded by our Savior to love others the way God, through Christ, has loved them, which includes the words that we use. We've been commanded to leverage our words with the benefit of the other person in mind. In other words, every conversation is a construction site, and you're either going to use your words to build or to tear down. And Paul says to use your words to build others up, not according to your needs, but according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. But why? And this is so important. This isn't just so you'll be a better person. This isn't just so that you'll get along. The reason that we, if you're a Jesus follower, if you're a Christian, we've got to get this right, is because you don't just represent yourself. For us, the application is you are more. You're more than just a single adult. You're more than just a boyfriend or a girlfriend or a fiance. You're more than just a husband or a wife. You're more than just a student. You're more than just an employer or an employer or a manager or a neighbor. You're more than just a parent or a brother or sister. You're a follower of Jesus. And to use Jesus' words, that means you're the salt of the earth. So our words should do what salt does, especially in the context of what Jesus, when Jesus lived and said these words, in a world without refrigeration, salt preserved, salt protected food, which ultimately protected lives, that were called by Jesus to preserve and protect, not to harm, not to undermine. And not only that, Jesus says, you're the light of the world, that our words should bring light and life to every single person that we meet and every single person that we're in a relationship with. Jesus says, you're the light of the world. A town built on a hill can't be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and then put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on a stand so that it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and as a result, glorify your Father in heaven. Our words should bring light and life to the people who are on the other side of us, ultimately so that people will connect the dots between how you live and what you say and who you worship and follow. So you use your weighty words to build and encourage. And again, just imagine the influence the church would gain and would have in the community and have in the world if we were to get this right, if we had gotten it right. I mean, imagine if for the last 50 years or the last 20 or just even the last 10 years, especially on social media, if Jesus followers had embraced this posture with what they said and how they said it and how they chose their words and directed them to the people on the other side of them. Do you know what we would hear? We would hear things like this. Those Christians, they kind of believe some weird stuff, but I got to be honest. They're the most encouraging people I've ever met. Like even when they say hard things, you just can't help but sense they really have your best interest in mind. They make the classroom better. They make my work environment better just by being there. They make it better for everyone around them. And the way those Christian men talk to and about their wives, not me yesterday, the way they talk to and about their wives, their children, the way those Christian wives talk about or talk to their husbands or children, I mean, honestly, like I poke a little fun at them, but deep down, honestly, I'd like that in my marriage. I'd like more of that in my marriage. I'd like more of that with my kids. And eventually, sometimes they say goofy stuff, but then they own it. It's hard to hate these people because even though I think they may be wrong, like the way they talk to, the way they treat one another, and people who are nothing like them, it's like they're genuine, they're sincere. And when I'm in trouble, when I need advice, you know, that's who I call on. I mean, this is one of the fascinating things to me. Like as recently as this past week, actually 2 weeks ago, I was having coffee, randomly interacted with someone who actually is from another country, a Muslim faith. We had a 10-minute conversation. He reached out and wanted to have coffee again. And he wanted to have a spiritual conversation. And it turns out in this other country where his family and he are Muslim, that he actually went to a Catholic boarding school in the country because the family could afford it. And so apparently what he said to me, he says, "You're my priest now." Like, I don't know what that means, but I'm happy to connect up again, and we're meeting again this week. Meaning, for whatever reason, the interaction, God just used it. Like, there's a lot of things we don't agree about, but he wants to connect. And there are people in your lives that go like, I'm not even a church person, but my neighbor, there's something about him. I feel like I can talk to him. He's a Christian. I'm not, but I came to talk to him because I'm hitting some bumps in my marriage. And he even confronted me on a few points. He kind of got up in my business, but it's clear he cares about me. His words make sense. All my other friends are saying, oh, it's none of my business, but like these crazy Christians, like, they care. And I'm not sure I could ever believe what they believe, but it's clear that they believe it. What if we just did that? Because when we don't get this right, Paul tells us what it looks and sounds like to everyone around us, especially when we make it known that we're Christians. And if we don't get this right, he writes to this young church in Corinth. He says, if I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but I don't have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. Paul says you can have perfect theology. You can have the clearest picture of God, of anyone in the world. You can have the entire New Testament memorized in the Greek. He says, I don't care. If you don't get your words right, if you don't make sure your words are coming from a place of others first kind of love, in the lives of the people around you at work and home, you know what they hear? A resounding gong and a clanging cymbal. For illustration, I thought about bringing some up here, but it's just so loud and obnoxious. He says, if your love isn't driving your words, if love isn't the filter through which your words pass, if you are not there to build them up, then just shut up, because you're just making things worse. You're doing more harm than good. And for some of you, you're like me. Every now and then, you're a bad gatekeeper. You let words out. You can't take them back. You've got some work to do. You've got some rebuilding. Don't miss next week. And if you have people in your life who are not Christians, or they've kept church or Christ at a distance, odds are it connects to reckless, unchrist-like words being spoken to them or towards somebody they love from other Christians, and it drove them away, it keeps them away. And if that's the case, we should apologize. And the irony is that Jesus reserved his harshest words for religious people who were careless with their words towards people that he loved. So for all of us, I forget, and so do you. So today is a reminder to remember. To remember who and what you represent to the person on the other side of you. And if you're a Christian, remember you represent the person who laid down his life for you. To reconcile you and the person on the other side of you to God. Let me pray for us. Father, all this easy to say, hard to do. I pray for all of us, God, as James points out, that really none of us ever master our tongues. For those, Father, that struggle to find those words, to get the words, to formulate them when they need to, Father, I pray that you would help them tangibly with that. And for those of us, Father, that it's more of a fire hydrant, God, I pray that your Spirit would help us with this, closing that valve, that we would be slow to speak, quick to listen. And Father, I pray for every one of us who there are people in our life that our words are impacting them far more than we know, that you would just give us an awareness of that, a sensitivity to it, and not just today, but every single day after this, that your Spirit would help us. And Jesus said that when he left, he was sending the Helper, your Holy Spirit. So we can't do this without you. So I pray that you would help us, Father, so that we would be builders and not destroyers of the people around us. And Father, I pray all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.